This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
And the Dagoba Group, a global diversity and inclusion consulting practice with specialties in unconscious bias, leadership dynamics, and client engagement. Authors of the book, The Inclusion Dividend. More at thedagobagroup.com.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Mass shootings dominate headlines, and guns dominate the political agenda once again, with Americans starkly divided on this question. Would tougher gun restrictions mean fewer of these devastating incidents? Would they make the situation worse, or do laws make no difference at all to a shooter intent on doing harm? It's a heated debate on both the presidential campaign trail here in New Hampshire and at our state house. In fact, for next year, lawmakers have legislation they're preparing, from a bill to lift the ban on firearms on college campuses to one that would prohibit guns at large sporting events, houses of worship, polling places, and bars. Today in The Exchange, we take the pulse of this issue once again, and let's hear from you. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have three guests for the hour. Joining us from Los Angeles is Adam Winkler, professor of law at the UCLA School of Law and author of the book Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. Adam Winkler, welcome back. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us in the studio, David Pierce, Democratic State Senator from the Upper Valley. And Senator Pierce, good to see you. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Laura, for having me.
And also with us, Bob Clegg, President of Pro Gun New Hampshire and a former state senator. And Bob Clegg, welcome back. Good to see you, too.
Thank you.
Well, all of you, here we are again after a year of multiple high-profile mass shootings, and the nation once again ends up debating guns. In your opinion, what's changed in this debate, if anything, in recent years with the rising number of these mass killings? And Bob Clegg, I'll go to you first.
Well, I think what's really changed in these years is the fact that people that are unarmed seem to be the first targets of anybody who wants to create havoc. Paris was a no-gun zone. California was a no-gun zone. The schools are no-gun zones. They're picking places where they're going to be the safest in committing their carnage, and we need to change that.
So your thought is what more people are thinking about these days is not gun control, but maybe I should arm myself?
After the California incident, I had 12 people contact me and say, I've never wanted a gun, but I'd like one now, and can you point me to where I should buy one and also where I should be trained? So we've sent them to professional people who can train them to be safe. And as my brother, who never liked guns before, said, I don't want to be caught at work like those people.
What do you think, David Pierce? How has the conversation, the debate, changed in the last couple of years, you know, after Newtown and Tucson and San Bernardino and Chattanooga and Charleston and on and on?
Well, it's an epidemic, and that's what's changed about it. I think more people are aware of the issue now. But I think we need to talk about starting off on points that we can agree on, finding common ground. And I think a good point of common ground is that I think we can all agree that we need to do everything we can to keep guns out of the hands of people who would wreak this kind of havoc. Keeping guns out of the hands of law-abiding citizens is not the way to do that. But keeping guns out of the hands of those who would do us harm, that's what we can agree on. And I think the reason we have this carnage is because of loopholes in our laws. And if we close those loopholes, I think we can have a safer place, or safer communities, safer, keeping our families safe, things like that.
And I'll definitely get back to that question, Senator Pierce, because there's a lot of debate around that issue, given that some of these shooters have gotten their guns perfectly legally. But Adam Winkler, I wonder what you think. You've been researching this for a long time. Any shifts or changes in the discussion and the politics around this issue?
I think we've seen big shifts in the discussion. You know, so many people who favor gun control were frustrated after Newtown that no new federal legislation has been adopted. And I hear it time and time again, oh, nothing's changed. But I think we have seen a really reinvigorated gun control movement in America. We have President Obama, who in 2008 and 2012 in his campaigns totally avoided talking about gun control. He wanted not to talk about it at all. And after Newtown, that completely changed. He really embraced gun control, and we see that the Democratic candidates have all featured gun control as a major part of their platform. That's starkly different from what we've seen in the past. We're also seeing much more political mobilization on the gun control side. We're seeing a lot of political money on the gun control side from Michael Bloomberg and others. So we're starting to see maybe a slightly more level playing field between the NRA and gun control forces on Election Day.
Although I've also read, Adam, and I'd love your thoughts, that there are more people feeling the way that Bob Clegg described, that, you know, look, these people are unarmed and it's terrible and they don't have a chance to defend themselves. So I have also read that more people are buying guns to make themselves feel safer.
Well, you know, these kinds of incidents are scaring a lot of people, and people take different responses to them. Some people believe that the answer is fewer guns on the streets. Others think the answer is more guns and let me have a gun to protect myself. We do know that gun ownership as a general matter is in a steady long-term decline in America. While we still certainly have a lot of guns, about 300 million guns in circulation, the number of households in which guns are owned has been declining steadily for about 40 years. So what we're really seeing is the same gun owners just buying more and more guns.
I see. So is that a demographic thing, Adam? I mean, what's behind that shift? And don't worry, Bob Clegg, I'll get you in on that too. But go ahead. What is behind that steady long-term reduction in gun ownership that you see?
Well, I think it is a demographic story. We find that people who live in urban areas are less likely to want to own a gun, support gun control more. We find generally that minority groups are biggest supporters of gun control. And as those populations get larger, as they are in America, then we're likely to see more support for gun control. Now, that said, I'm not saying that the NRA is not a political powerhouse. That would be a silly statement. But we are seeing some growing support for gun control in the country, at least as a matter of political mobilization.
What do you think, Bob Clegg? Are you seeing a long-term decline in gun ownership in New Hampshire?
Not at all. I think the people that he's talking about are the people who live in places where they're not allowed to have guns. So they want more gun control because the criminals still have them and they feel unsafe. For New Hampshire, for instance, we see more and more women asking for gun classes. They're learning how to fire. They're buying guns. And we see the gun industry actually increasing in sales. And it's not people like me who are buying them. It is people who don't have them. And it's for safety. People have finally said, I can't rely on the police. It takes them 18 to 20 minutes to show up. I have to be able to defend myself.
You know, getting back to the question that you raised earlier, Bob, it does seem we as a nation are of two minds on this question. Would more good guys with guns, to use the NRA's language, help keep Americans safer, or would tougher restrictions on gun ownership help keep Americans safer? And we've been hearing a lot about this on the presidential campaign trail, of course, here in New Hampshire. Here's Donald Trump talking about this, promoting the idea that a, quote, good guy with a gun could help a lot. And this is Donald Trump speaking on CBS's Face the Nation.
Once too far. They're killing people, whether it's what we just saw in California or in Paris. They're killing people, innocent people, people without guns. You look at Paris, no guns, nothing. And you look at California, no guns. I can tell you one thing, if I'm in there and I've had a gun, we're going down shooting. We're going to knock them out, okay, one way or the other. And if a couple of guns are in that room, you talk about Second Amendment, which I'm a big believer in the Second Amendment. In Paris, they had no guns. In California, they had no guns. Only the bad guys had the guns. So they were like sitting ducks, every one of them.
So, David Pierce, I want to ask you about that. Again, as Bob Clegg said, people are buying guns to defend themselves. Here in New Hampshire, what do you think about this idea?
Well, I mean, Donald Trump, sitting ducks. I mean, you know, he's a master at in stoking fear among people. But I think another area of common ground that we can agree on is that the reason people are afraid, the reason people that this issue has been elevated into the political discourse like we haven't seen in a while is because of the epidemic of gun violence in this country. I mean, here in New Hampshire, every 4 days, someone is killed by a handgun.
Often by suicide, correct?
Or it's murder, suicide, always. You know, that's an aggregate figure. And so I think the idea of saying a good guy with a gun is the only way to stop a bad guy with a gun. I mean, you know, some ad man in New York probably came up with that. But the point is that I think the central issue is how do we keep guns out of the hands of those who should not have them? Convicted felons, the dangerously mentally ill, terrorists. And it's the loopholes in our laws that allow that to happen.
I want to go back to our listeners in just a moment, but I have to ask you, Adam Winkler, again, as our researcher, is there definitive research around the good guy with a gun issue that an armed citizen or the threat of an armed citizen has indeed deterred killing?
Well, we know that there are occasional incidents where someone with a gun is able to use it and stop a shooter and a shooting from occurring, but it's exceptionally rare, in part because while it's maybe good politics to say that these shooters choose gun-free zones, we've seen actually no evidence whatsoever in any of the investigations of a single mass shooter with all of their Facebook posts and letters and other kinds of things that they've written. Not one has ever pointed out that they're going to target a quote-unquote gun-free zone. And, of course, many of these shootings have been happening in states where people are allowed to carry a gun. The Tucson shooter, for instance, who shot Gabrielle Giffords. Remember, Arizona has the most liberal gun laws in the state. So I don't think it's right to say that these shooters target gun-free zones. It may be accurate to say that if more people had guns at those scenes, it's certainly possible that someone could use a firearm for self-defense and possibly stop a shooting. But again, that's been very rare when it's actually happened at all.
Okay, and I can see my two guests in the studio want to jump in, and they've got lots of listeners who want to jump in our conversation too. So super quick, Bob Clegg, David Pierce, go ahead.
Basically, all I wanted to say is two points. One, suicide's not murder, and you can't use suicide numbers to decide whether or not we should ban guns, because we have how many people who are using fentanyl and heroin as a way to commit suicide. So let's be realistic and let's be honest. And as far as somebody not posting, everybody knows that you pick the safest place to do whatever it is you're going to do. You're not going to walk into a place like the New Hampshire State House where there's probably 50 or 60 people in the house with guns and decide that you're going to take a shot at somebody.
Well, after the Parrish shootings, they did a reenactment, and they got 20 people, I believe, who they reenacted the situation and said, okay, if you had a gun, let's see if you could have stopped the shooters. And I think there was, if my recollection is correct, I think one out of those 20 people were able to actually stop the reenactment of the violence. So I think Professor Winkler is correct in that, you know, it is rare that the so-called good guy with a gun stops a bad guy. But I think we need to get back to the point is that let's keep guns out of the hands of those who would do us harm.
Well, and I definitely want to go to the issue of the no-fly list that Democrats have raised recently. There's been a lot of talk about that on both sides. But let's go to our listeners first, gentlemen, a lot of people who want to jump in our conversation. The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Once again today in the exchange, we are revisiting the gun issue, given the high-profile mass shootings that we have seen this year, including another one just recently. Linda joins us from Newfields. Hi, Linda. You're on the exchange. Welcome.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I am the wife of a lifelong hunter who hunts all kinds of game. But we are both very upset and belong to groups that are trying to control guns, because you see, the saying the word gun control doesn't talk about assault weapons and cuts out hunting. We lap it all together. Now, the real question here on these shootings, and I understand we've had 300 mass shootings this year, assault weapons are being used. These are not hunting. These are not for sport of any kind. The only thing an assault weapon does is mow down people.
So what would you like to see, Linda?
I'd like to see an elimination of assault weapons because there's absolutely no use for somebody to have it. They're not target practice. They're not hunting. That could be changed, and
all
that would be a start.
Linda, thank you for calling, and we also have an email from Dennis who says sort of the same thing. I grew up in a hunting family. I get it. Why do we have easy access to military assault weapons that are only designed to efficiently kill large amounts of people? Now, Adam, I want to go to you first, but get our guests, our New Hampshire guests, to jump in too. But Adam, there has been a lot of talk, especially in the past, about focusing on different types of weapons, banning this kind, that kind. There's been some quibbling about the language. What's an assault weapon? What's a military style weapon? Can you just put some clarity on this issue, please?
Well, it's certainly a difficult one to put clarity on, in part because there's so much confusion about what these weapons are, and I think the caller's questions suggest how much there is that people don't really know about these weapons. We call them weapons of war. People can mow down lots of people at one time. These are not machine guns that are used by military personnel. Those laws, those guns have been outlawed effectively since 1986. The guns that are targeted by these assault rifles are really just ordinary rifles that have a mean, menacing, scary, military-style look. And indeed, rifles, assault or otherwise, are rarely used in gun crime. Only about 3% of all gun deaths happen at the hands of a rifle, happen because of a rifle. Gun crime is overwhelmingly handgun crime, and that includes the mass shooters. Although we've seen some mass shooters use these military-style rifles, almost all of them have also had handguns, and the majority of them have used only handguns.
So sort of old-fashioned handguns, Adam, where you squeeze and one bullet comes out, or are they handguns that can cause more harm more quickly?
No, they are handguns that squeeze. You squeeze it one, pull the trigger once, you shoot one round of ammunition. And we should be clear that all of the assault rifles that are talked about in these bans are all the exact same thing. You pull the trigger once, you shoot one round of ammunition. You want to shoot a second round of ammunition, you have to pull the trigger twice. So these assault rifles, when it comes to lethality, are not significantly different from any handgun, shotgun, or other rifle. That's completely lawful, even when these bans are in effect.
Well, Linda, thank you for the call. You can join us, too, at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. So, Bob Clegg, did you want to also jump in on that question from Linda? Some people say, hey, I'm a hunter, but what about these weapons that can fire so many bullets and kill so many people all at once?
Well, I think Adam is right. We're talking about things that look like assault weapons. They're not. They're just single-shot guns, and every time you pull the trigger, something comes out of the barrel. And so people looking at it saying, let's ban that. I think with the exception of Paris, where they actually had military assault rifles, I think what he's saying is correct. It's either handguns are the easiest things to use, so that's what most people use, easiest thing to hide. So to ban these kind of things isn't going to make any difference.
Are there bans on certain types of weapons in this country? I know there's been so much conversation. There was some bans in the 90s.
I wouldn't call it a ban, but I would say that in order to have a fully automatic weapon, you have to have a license from the federal government, and that takes a lot of background checks. They actually send people out to talk to your family and your friends and your neighbors to see if you're right, and you have to have certain places to store them. So it's not easy to have one. And people have them only because they're collectors usually.
David Pierce, this used to be a big focus, again, 10, 15 years ago, the type of weapon. Is that now where gun control advocates are focusing, on the type of weapon, or is it more now these days on who should be able to have a weapon and who shouldn't?
I think it's on the latter. I think, again, the way we address the runaway epidemic of violence and gun violence in this country is by closing the loopholes, like in the background check law, because right now convicted felons, the dangerously mentally ill, terrorists, those who would do us harm can get a gun, no questions asked, because of those loopholes. And if we close those loopholes, we would set ourselves on a path to making our community safer. We're going to keep – I think the point is keeping guns out of the hands of those who shouldn't have them. Keeping guns out of the hands out of law-abiding citizens is not the issue, because if they're law-abiding by definition, they're not going to do us harm. But we have to close the loopholes, and it's a very simple, quick changes to the law that we can do that can help us towards that goal.
Here's a Facebook comment from Heidi who says, all gun sales should require a background check and there should be licensing and testing before a firearm can be purchased. And testing should be repeated every few years to show skills have been maintained. Heidi says concealed carry should require additional testing and training. She says with every right comes responsibilities. Very quickly to you, Bob Clegg, the concealed issue has been an issue here in New Hampshire, right? We've gone back and forth on this.
Well, it is. And to make a comment, why don't we test drivers every year, too, so that make sure they haven't lost their ability to drive? I mean, people are reaching. There are no loopholes. And everybody that's out there, there's already a law that says you can't sell to the mentally ill, you can't sell to felons. So I don't know what more we could do because we have the laws. And as far as concealed is much safer than to have somebody carrying a gun that everybody can see. And that's why I prefer to have people carry concealed. If somebody can't see your gun, they're not likely to try to confront you about it and create a problem. And by having it concealed, you're not so much of a target, but you're prepared to protect yourself.
Go ahead, Senator Pierce, and then I want to go back to Adam Winkler.
We absolutely do have loopholes in our gun laws. In the background check law, you can go if you go through a federally licensed dealer, you have to go through a criminal background check. If you go to a gun show or you buy a gun over the internet, there is no background check, and so no questions asked. I've seen flyers of promoters of gun shows here in New Hampshire, and in big bold letters, get a gun, no questions asked. I mean, that's just a simple change to our laws that we could enact to make sure that the mentally ill, that the dangerously mentally ill, that convicted felons, that terrorists, if we have information in the system that shows that they would do us harm, we should be able to know that. So there are loopholes that we can close.
Adam, what is the status of the whole background check system in this country? Can you just explain it to us? What happens at the federal level? What happens at the state level?
Sure. Well, at the federal level, we require every federally licensed gun dealer to do a background check every time they sell a gun. So if you go to a gun store or if you go to a gun show and buy a gun from a federally licensed dealer who sets up a booth there, you have to go through a background check. And it'll trigger if you've got a felony conviction or you've been adjudicated to be mentally ill or a variety of other factors like a dishonorable discharge. And you won't be able to purchase a gun. We know that the system that's in place has turned away more than 1 million people who've gone to a gun store and tried to buy a gun but failed the background check. However, I think the law does have a very big loophole in the sense that you don't have to be a federally licensed dealer to sell a gun. And if you're not a federally licensed dealer and you want to sell a gun, you don't have to do a background check. It's totally true that, as Mr. Clegg says, that you're not allowed to sell a gun to a criminal, but you've got no way to figure out whether he is a criminal because you don't do a background check. What we do in California, and states are allowed to adopt additional restrictions on the sale of guns. In California, for instance, we require every transfer of a firearm to go through a federal firearms dealer, and that requires that a background check be done.
More on the debate over guns in a moment, and I'll ask you too, Bob Clegg, about the background checks. There's a lot more to talk about there. We'll also continue to get your questions and comments in at 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're re-examining the gun issue in the wake of recent mass shootings. Some have called for gun control. Others believe the solution is for more citizens to carry weapons. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Joining us from Los Angeles is Adam Winkler, professor of law at the UCLA School of Law, author of the book Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. With me in studio, Bob Clegg, president of Pro Gun New Hampshire and a former state senator, and Senator David Pierce, a Democratic state senator from the Upper Valley. One more time, the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. And before we go back to our listeners, former Senator Clegg, I did want to get from you as well thoughts on the background check system. Senator Pierce has said repeatedly that there are holes in this background system. Adam Winkler has explained that some gun sellers don't have to subject buyers two background checks, and I just wonder what your thoughts are around that.
Well, as far as selling something privately, the law in the state of New Hampshire requires that you know the person you sell it to and that you know that the person is of good character and is allowed to have the gun. So you have some real responsibility when you sell a gun to someone that you don't know. You're not following the law. As far as buying guns over the internet, you can't. You can't buy guns. I can't sell a gun to somebody who lives in another state without going through a federal firearms dealer. So the internet thing, they can't sell you directly over the internet. When you look at the internet, and I've bought guns on the internet because I'm a collector, so I've bought older ones. They say to me, give me your firearms dealer and have him send us his license. And they ship the gun to that person who then
does— Not to you directly.
Not to me directly. And then he does the background check because he has to, and then he sells it to me, even if the gun was built in 1700s.
So if I had a gun and I wanted to sell it to you or David Pierce, you know, just as a private seller, the responsibility is on me to do that sort of character background check.
Well, it's not an official background check. But it's easy for you to do because you can go to your local gun dealer and say, I want to sell Bob Clegg this gun, and he will charge you approximately $15 to run the background check on Bob Clegg.
Do I have to do that?
You don't have to, but if you don't know me, I would suggest highly that you do. Because if you can't guarantee that I'm of good moral character to actually have that gun, maybe I'm a convicted felon. You don't know. If you're not sure, then I wouldn't sell it because you're responsible for it afterwards.
Senator Pierce.
I think what Bob is telling us is about the how effective the background check system is. And as Adam has said before—
How effective it is?
Yeah, because—and Adam has said that earlier, said that, you know, there have been millions of attempted gun purchases by those who would fail a background check that have been stopped from getting the gun. But I think what we need to get back to is that the loophole in the law, where there is no licensed, federally licensed gun dealer involved in the transaction— no background check need be conducted. No questions asked. Felons, criminally insane, and terrorists can get guns. And that's why we have the gun violence problem that we have in this country. Closing those loopholes is a simple, quick, easy way to fix the problem. Now, you know, we talked about assault bans earlier, assault gun bans. You know, and the corporate gun lobby has said for years that, you know, guns don't kill people. People kill people. And so that's what we're talking about. Let's make sure that we keep guns out of the hands of those who would do us harm.
Focus on the people. That's the message that you keep bringing to the table this morning, Senator Pierce. Bob Clegg, go ahead, quick jump in, and then we'll go back to our listeners. Lots of people
quickly,
who want to jump in.
We have plenty of laws, and if people followed the law, we wouldn't even be sitting here talking about it. People aren't going to follow any new laws that you put in. There are no loopholes. There are people who do things illegally. Chicago's a perfect example. And when people like Bloomberg start throwing money out there, let's remember that Bloomberg, under no circumstances, will ever have to be what Trump calls a sitting duck because he has a great big security force around him at all times, and they are armed.
Well, and Adam Winkler, you've written that there are 320 million guns in America, and they're not going anywhere. And in your words, Adam, since we're talking about background checks, you've said we can have all the background checks you want, but, quote, crazy people will be able to get their hands on guns. So chime in there, Adam, on this background check issue.
Well, that's right, because I think what so many times we focus on, how can we eliminate these mass shootings? You know, this mass shooting happens in California or happens somewhere else, and we say, we need to do something to stop that. And what I was suggesting there is that I don't think that that even effective gun control laws are going to significantly reduce mass shootings. Crazy people will be able to get their hands on guns, and most of the mass shootings that we've seen have been committed by people who passed background checks. I do think, though, that gun control can work, but it can work if we're trying to reduce the daily death toll from guns, trying to eliminate the ordinary gun violence. I think we can have more success with that by background checks, for instance, universal background checks that really require everyone, if you want to sell a gun, to go through a background check.
So given your studies, Adam, you would say that background checks might stop, let's say, a domestic violence situation where somebody's upset and angry and they want to kill their former spouse. Going through a background check might stop that, but a mass shooter who's going to just walk into a grocery store or a mall or a theater or a church or wherever, less likely. They're going to get that gun no matter what. Is that what you're saying?
That's the general idea, although I think we should always be recognizing that because there are so many guns out there, any law that we put in place, even if it's going to move the ball a little bit, is not going to eliminate a problem. It's going to slowly reduce a problem, maybe lower the number of people who die as a daily matter from gun violence from 33 to 31. You know, it's not going to eliminate the problem entirely. We have a society where there's a lot of guns. There's going to be gun violence because of that.
All right, let's go to AJ in Conway. Hi, AJ. You're on The Exchange. Thanks a lot for calling in.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Go ahead.
So I'd like to speak to the mental health aspect of what they're trying to install for gun laws. So how many people in this country do we have that are on prescription medications for mental health issues or have sought therapy for mental health issues? I don't know the statistics, so I'm not going to try and quote. But I assume that it's a lot. And trying to limit those people from getting guns is, in essence, taking away the Second Amendment right. Also, I think that, you know, New Hampshire being a must-issue state for concealed carry, people should have to go through some sort of training, self-defense training with their firearm, because when you decide to conceal carry, you're taking that responsibility to protect yourself and the general public around you.
So, AJ, don't stigmatize people with mental illness. Take away their Second Amendment rights, as you said.
Yes.
And then the second part of what you said, if I understand correctly, is if you want to carry concealed, you should have to go through some pretty extensive training?
Not extensive, but general firearm safety, how to actually go through the motions of, you know, an active shooter situation while you're carrying concealed.
Okay. AJ, thank you for calling in. Bob Clegg, what do people have to go through now to carry concealed?
Well, one of the things—
Again, this has been a big debate.
It's been a big debate, but I want to first say that we have to be very careful earmarking mental health drugs as a sign that somebody actually has a mental health problem, because they're using those drugs now to control pain, especially since we have a big issue with opioids. So you don't want to classify people based on medication. As far as getting a concealed license in the state of New Hampshire, what you have to do is prove that you're a good person. You give your local police chief a form and three of your best friends, and he calls them and they say, oh, yeah, he's a good guy, and that's it.
So all the debate over concealed carry permits,
the reason
not
why
that big a deal? Or?
The reason why we want to do away with the permit part is because a lot of chiefs are reluctant to give in because they feel that they might have some responsibility should you do something or something happen. And the other problem is, it's wintertime. If you're somebody who carries a gun and you put a jacket on and it's suddenly concealed, you're now committing a crime that could really severely hurt you in both your employment and other things.
Did you want to jump into Senator Pierce?
Yeah, we had this debate last session. On
it passed, Governor Hassan vetoed it.
And we sustained the veto because concealed carry, there's a difference between – New Hampshire law allows open carry. And it allows concealed carry with a license. We argued to retain the license because, again, going to local law enforcement, it's the vetting process. Is this person going to do us harm? And that's how, and again, it's a form of a background check. Again, trying to create loopholes is not the direction we should be going. We should be closing the loopholes.
Well, and toward that end, we heard earlier from Donald Trump his thoughts on gun safety, gun control, gun ownership. Let's hear now from Hillary Clinton. Here she is speaking in Iowa, defending her stance on gun control and adding that she supports banning people on the no-fly list from purchasing a firearm. Let's hear.
Now, from my perspective, if you're too dangerous to fly, you're too dangerous to buy a weapon. And at this point, there is no law that would tell any legitimate gun seller, don't sell it to this person because we've got them on the watch list. So what I've outlined, comprehensive background checks, closing the gun show loophole, closing the online loophole and the so-called Charleston loophole, and repealing the absolute immunity for gun makers and sellers, is supported not only by 92% of the American people, but 83% of gun owners.
Again, that's Hillary Clinton talking about gun control before an audience in Iowa. Adam Winkler, to the second half of what she said, is she right that those proposals she outlined are supported by 83% of gun owners?
Well, it does show that we know that polling for universal background checks, for closing the what's known as the gun show loophole, but probably should be called the private sale loophole because gun shows operate under the same rules as every place else, and closing what's been called sort of the terrorist gun gap, do get a lot of support when you subject them to polling. Nonetheless, the votes that really count there are whether you can get members of Congress to support them, and members of Congress don't seem to support them, in part because many of them are responding to a difference between the breadth of support and the depth of support for gun control. So gun control laws like universal background checks have broad support. About 90% of the people will, you poll, say all support them. The difference is that the 10% who oppose are going to be really politically mobilized on this issue and have a real intensity and will make this a focus of their vote the next election. And unfortunately for the gun control folks, of the 90% people who support background checks, for instance, they're not going to make it their big issue. And as a result, elected officials are responding largely to the intensity of people's political feelings, not just their breadth.
Well, and in the first part of that clip we just heard, she talked about this issue that's come up recently in the wake of San Bernardino, the idea that people on the government's no-fly list should not be allowed to purchase guns. That's the point Democrats are making. Republicans have a different thought, and we'll play a clip from Marco Rubio in a moment. But Bob Clegg, I'd love your thoughts, too, on this no-fly list debate.
Well, the problem is that people don't even know why they're on the no-fly list, and it's very difficult to find out why you're on, and there's no appeals process, so it's a problem. You know, we know for a fact that we have at least 72 people on the no-fly list who actually work in the airports and in places where they're around the airplanes. So the whole thing is a farce. And as far as restricting somebody's ability to purchase a firearm based on some imaginary reason, we're going to start doing that. We're going to start doing it on everything, and we can't allow government to just decide, I don't like you in your name. Ted Kennedy was on the no-fly list, remember?
What do you think about this issue? This has been a big one lately.
But there are suspected terrorists. There's evidence to support the inclusion of these suspected terrorists on the no-fly list. So where there may be exceptions, yes. But if there are terrorists on the no-fly list, they can get a gun, no questions asked. That's wrong. Close the loophole.
Adam Winkler, I haven't asked you about the no-fly list. This is kind of a new wrinkle, given that there are now terrorism fears in the mix with San Bernardino. How does this, Adam, change the thinking around guns, who should have them, what sort of controls there should be, if any?
Well, I think the terrorist watch list idea is a great idea and a bad law. In that, absolutely, we should ban suspected terrorists from being able to go into a gun store and easily buy a gun. We know that these guns in San Bernardino were legally purchased, and there's no reason a terrorist should be able to get their hands on a gun so easily. However, it's important that we recognize you have a constitutional right to have a gun, and we don't allow the government to take away your rights without providing due process of law. And the no-fly list themselves have been subjected to constitutional scrutiny, and several courts have said that the no-fly list was unconstitutional, and the government has had to revise the no-fly list procedures precisely because of those procedural concerns. Unfortunately, I think Democrats in Congress haven't been as attentive to this issue as they should, and they keep proposing a terrorist bill that doesn't have very good procedural protections for people when it could have better protections than the ones they're offering.
Well, here's Republican presidential candidate Marco Rubio talking about this issue in an interview with CNN's State of the Union program.
Because there are the majority of the people on the no-fly list are oftentimes people that basically just have the same name as somebody else who don't belong on the no-fly list. Former Senator Kennedy, Ted Kennedy, once said he was on a no-fly list. I mean, there are journalists on the no-fly list. There are others involved on the no-fly list that wind up there. These are everyday Americans that have nothing to do with terrorism. They wind up on the no-fly list. There's no due process or any way to get your name removed from in a timely fashion. And now they're having their Second Amendment right being impeded upon.
So that, again, that's Senator Marco Rubio, Republican presidential candidate, talking about this no-fly list issue. One more question for you on this, Adam Winkler, and then we'll move on to so many other topics around this. Is this no-fly list issue just going to be a talking point, or do you expect any changes to come out of this?
Well, I think it's going to be a talking point for the time being. We know that Congress is stalled on issues of gun control. Of course, Congress is stalled on just about every other issue as well, so that's not so surprising, perhaps. But as no matter who wins the presidential election in 2016, we know that the House is going to remain in the hands of Republicans. Republicans are dead set against this reform and any other significant gun reform. So I don't think we're going to see any new federal legislation in the near term.
Let's take another call. This is Ralph in Rochester. Hi, Ralph. Go ahead. You're in the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The reason I'm calling is to clarify an issue on the assault weapons. The difference between a regular hunting rifle and an assault weapon is that you can put a larger capacity magazine in the gun, and therefore it will hold more rounds. But as far as hunting goes, you can only use a five-round weapon, a rifle. And you can buy the five-round magazines for the so-called assault weapon, and now it becomes a modern sporting rifle and not an assault weapon. If they had a different appearance, if you didn't see them all the time on TV, the military, that at a quick look, they all look the same, and they're scary to a lot of people, and a lot of people are not gun people that doesn't realize that it's just a semi-automatic rifle,
so,
but has the capacity for a higher capacity magazine.
Okay. So, Ralph, thank you for calling in. And Bob Clegg, we dug into this a little bit earlier, but I'd like to hear from you. There is some confusion about the language, the terminology, high-capacity magazine, assault weapon, and so forth. Again, thank you for the call, Ralph. Can you jump in on there, Bob Clegg, please?
You know, it all boils down to how many rounds come out of the barrel every time you pull the trigger. And in an assault rifle, you pull the trigger once, and whatever you have in your magazine comes out. And in a regular rifle, whether it's a sporting rifle, a hunting rifle, a target rifle, every time you pull the trigger, one round comes through.
So given what we've seen with mass shootings, would it be a good idea to put some limits on guns that can fire multiple rounds all at once, given the ability to create mass casualties that way?
No, because people don't realize that I can change my magazine quicker than most people can sneeze. So it really doesn't matter how many are in the magazine. It's the person behind the gun.
I keep getting back to this issue about the gun itself, the person, the background checks, and so forth. Thank you for that call, Ralph. And we'll take more of your calls in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're revisiting once again the gun issue, given heightened concerns about mass shootings. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Bob Clegg, Adam Winkler, Senator David Pierce, let's go right back to our listeners. And John's calling from Thornton. Go ahead, John. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you, Laura. I'm a long-time listener here, and I enjoy your show very much.
Good.
My comment is, I don't know if anyone's touched upon it, but a lot of people have been saying that if everybody had guns at these mass shootings, things would be different. And in my opinion, yes, things would be different. We have more lead flying around in different directions. You know, you have to be highly trained to be in a location where there's a mass shooting, whether it's a party or a meeting or a theater. I mean, the first thing you want to do is take cover. You want to make sure your spouse is down. Then you have to lower your adrenaline, you have to lower your breathing, calmly take your gun out, decide what you're going to do, and take careful aim. I don't think many people are trained that well to do that. Some people who have guns today don't even know what end to shoot. And a lot of them, you know, they leave the last round in the chamber. That's called a killer round. Many people have been shot by cleaning their weapons. And, you know, you've got to be highly trained to have something like that.
So, John, serious doubts you have about this sort of good guy with a gun helping to stop a mass shooting. Bob Clegg, I'll throw that one to you first. Go ahead, please.
Well, I don't believe there are that many stupid people out there. Obviously, there are some who would leave a round in the chamber and then clean their gun. But most people who have guns are responsible people. Most people who carry guns are very responsible people. They know how dangerous it is, and they know the responsibility they carry when they have a gun with them.
He's challenging the idea that a person in that, you know, fraught situation would have the wherewithal to, you know, first duck and cover, second of all, protect the spouse,
and
third of all, get the gun.
The first thing you're supposed to do is duck and cover, but you either are going to panic or you're not going to panic, and if you're panicking, you're going to forget you have a gun. But most people – do we train for every single situation? Well, no, most people don't. But most people who carry a gun for their self-protection have enough information and enough training to know how to protect themselves, even if it's to hold their gun while they're hiding behind a door in case the killer comes through the door. Not everybody's going to rush to or rush into danger. That's why we have police and firefighters. Those guys run into the bullets and into the fires where regular people would probably just hide. But in case of mass shooters, if you're in the middle and you're watching hundreds of or tens of people getting killed, you're going to take your shot because you know you're next.
Do you want to jump in on that too, David Pierce?
Yeah. I think, again, we're talking about after the fact. We're talking about when the gun is already in the hands of the felon or the criminal or the terrorist. And yes, you know, as Adam said, it is very rare that anybody with a gun in one of those situations has actually stopped one of those mass shootings. I talked about the reenactment of the Paris shootings, of how they reenacted it and showed that it is also very rare that someone can stop one of those mass shootings. What we need to do is identify the loopholes in the law that allow criminals to get guns and stop that flow of guns into the wrong hands.
And that's the point that you keep making, Senator Pierce. And yet, as Adam has said, there are more than 300 million guns in this country. Somebody intent on doing mass harm is going to find a way to do it. Adam Lanza, the Newtown shooter, stole his mother's guns, for example. So, you know, I just wonder how effective that's going to be.
Well, I will agree. And Adam said this as well. This is that, you know, closing the loopholes is not going to stop every tragedy. But it is going to stop some. And isn't that worth the effort to stop some? I mean, today, on December 9th, dozens of people are going to be murdered with a gun. Hundreds of people are going to be assaulted with a gun. And the epidemic of gun violence has just gotten away from us. And simple changes like closing the loopholes is going to help in that. It's not going to cure the problem. It is going to help it, and shouldn't we be doing what we can to help it?
And you keep saying closing the loopholes, Senator Pierce. Just reiterate for us what loopholes you're talking about, because we heard earlier from Bob Clegg that there aren't really any loopholes.
Well, I think I addressed it before, and Adam, confirmed there are loopholes, and the loophole is that if a gun transaction it goes through a federally licensed gun dealer, a criminal background check must be conducted. If it does not go through a federally licensed gun dealer, no criminal background check has to be conducted. So gun shows, internet sales, parking lot sales, all of that do not require criminal background checks.
And again, we covered this earlier, but I do want to let you back jump in there, Bob Clegg.
There are no internet sales without background checks. But the rest of it is you're creating a law that's basically going to say, once again, okay, law-abiding citizen, here's another law for you to do, and the criminal is just going to laugh because they're ignoring the law now. They're stealing the guns. They're selling stolen guns. You're not going to change that by saying, before I can give my son a gun, I have to do a criminal background check on him.
Super quick, Senator Pierce, and then back to our listeners.
The internet issue. I mean, people can meet on the internet and sell the gun in a parking lot. So that's confusing the issue.
Let's take another call. This is Susan in Bristol. Hi, Susan. Go ahead. You're in the exchange. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. First of all, I think that the point that Ralph from Rochester made, I'd like to reiterate that there's a fear of the unknown. I grew up in eastern Ohio hunting and fishing from the time that I was a child, so I'm very comfortable with guns. I'm also licensed for concealed carry. I do carry a handgun at all times. I'm a single mom. I have a violent ex-husband of whom I'm afraid, and I feel more safe with my concealed carry weapon. On the other hand, I'd like to point out that law-abiding, responsible gun owners are often in situations where they could possibly defend themselves, but also become victims of these crazy people. Right here in Bristol, we have a recent case where a fire chief and his wife returning home from dinner to find burglars in their home, and amongst other valuables that were stolen, they took his handguns. So these criminals are going to find a way to find guns, and it's not going to be hard. It's really easy to get access to things that the bad people want. But another point I'd like to make, which is really important, and I heard your guests bring this up earlier, you really cannot be sure who the crazy people are. First of all, not all criminals end up convicted because there are plea bargains, and not all guilty people are end up being sentenced. They're not they sometimes get off the hook. And then the other problem you have is that not all the crazy people who would murder, whether it's mass murder or an individual murder, are diagnosed. I think the famous case is with the sociopaths. You've got your Ted Bundy types who wear collars and ties, and they seem so professional. So there are a lot of people out there that you're never going to be able to diagnose.
So the solution, you think, Susan, is to be a gun owner, get trained, and protect yourself. Is that what you're saying?
I absolutely promote responsible gun ownership. I don't think the slow reduction in the cases that we might see is worth restricting the freedoms of responsible gun owners.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling in. And here's an email from Bart, who says, a buyer may be of sound mind when buying a gun, but what guarantees are there that the buyer does not develop a disorder over time where they are no longer of what one would call sound mind? So thank you again for that call, Susan, and thank you for the email, Bart. And Adam Winkle, I'd love to get your thoughts on either Bart's point or Susan's point.
Well, I think we should be really clear what we're talking about here. No one is talking about going out and taking away guns from law-abiding people. We're still, no matter any of these gun control laws are adopted, we're not going out and depriving civilians of access to firearms. What we're doing is trying to require background checks, that if you buy a gun, you have to prove that you've passed a background check. It's not a perfect law. I don't think there is any perfect law out there. And also don't buy the argument that, well, criminals aren't going to obey these laws, so we don't need to pass them. We have laws that are disobeyed by criminals every single day, laws on murder. But we don't get rid of laws on murder. We don't get rid of laws on speeding. We don't get rid of laws on sexual assault just because people will nonetheless commit those crimes. We have those laws in place not because they're just going to prevent crimes from occurring, but because it gives us a basis for punishing people who do take risky behaviors that we think are overall bad for society. And that's what we should be focusing on, not some crazy logic that, oh, well, we can only have a law if it's 100% effective.
Bob Clegg, I can see you want to jump in on the point that Adam made.
Nobody's saying do away with the laws that are existing. What I'm saying is we already have laws that cover the problem. So why do we keep adding and adding and adding when we know that law-abiding citizens aren't the problem, it's the criminal? So you try to add one more law saying, oh, well, the criminal will listen to this one. They won't. I would never say do away with the sexual assault laws or murder. And we are, by the way, taking away the gun rights of people with mental health, and that's the problem. People with PTSD, people who have suddenly had some kind of crisis in their life, if in fact they seek treatment and it's known, they lose their right to have a gun. And in the state of New Hampshire, there's no law that allows them to have it back.
While we're talking about laws, we should just quickly check in on some of the New Hampshire bills that are being prepared for next year. And Adam, we'll ask you, too, if you're hearing similar debates elsewhere. So, Bob Clegg, what are the main bills that you'll be keeping an eye on concerning guns when the legislature reconvenes?
Anything with Kathy Rogers' name on it.
Okay. So she's got a couple bills. Yeah.
Well, you know, she's got one that wants liability, gun owners to have liability insurance, yet we don't even require liability insurance from automobile owners. So we have all kinds of people out there, and more people get killed by automobiles in the state of New Hampshire and the country than by guns, but yet we're going to put liability. She knows that no insurance company is going to want to take that risk. So it's just another matter of being able to say, okay, well, you couldn't afford the liability insurance, so you can't have one.
We also have a bill that I see that's coming up that is going to enhance the penalty for someone who steals a handgun from its owner.
Would that be a deterrent? You know, somebody's got the mindset to break into your house, to steal your stuff. Would they really look at your computer and say, okay, I'm going to take that, but, ooh, I'm not going to take the handgun because there's a bigger penalty?
I think that, enhanced penalties have shown have proven to be effective in many areas.
Really?
We haven't seen that in this area, so it's unproven, but it has worked in other areas.
What do you think, Adam Winkler? Any middle ground on this issue that you're seeing in the states or at the national level? And we'll close it out there.
Well, I don't think we're seeing much middle ground in the states or at the federal level. We're seeing actually maybe a more significant divide between red states and blue states. We're seeing in blue states the adoption of more restrictive gun control laws, trying to make up for the loopholes in federal law, things like background checks, restrictions on high-capacity magazines, some places still talking about banning assault rifles. And on the in the red states, what we're seeing is the opposite, laws pushing to liberalize gun laws, make it easier for people to carry guns in more places, like Georgia's notorious Guns Everywhere law that allows guns in bars and other places like that. So I think we actually, guns are really highlighting the divide in America and unfortunately not bringing us together.
All right. Well, Adam Winkler, we will talk to you again, I'm sure. We really appreciate you getting up early out there in California to be with us this morning. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Adam Winkler, professor of law at the UCLA School of Law, author of the book Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. Senator Pierce, good to see you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Senator David Pierce, Democratic State Senator from the Upper Valley. Bob Clegg, good to see you, too. Thank
good
you for being
you.
Here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Bob Clegg, president of Pro Gun New Hampshire and a former state senator. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Faith Meixel and Daniel Rosinski-Larson. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Knoy.